Good evening and welcome to a public forum on the Affordable Care Act, hosted by Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The ACA takes a big step forward on Tuesday, October 1st, when the new healthcare marketplaces open for business. The overhaul of the healthcare system is confusing and raises a lot of questions. The focus of this evening's forum is to separate fact from fiction, hoping to make the Affordable Care Act easier to understand. This will be a policy-free discussion. Our panel will answer your questions as best they can about how this overhaul will affect individuals and businesses. We thank them for taking part in this public forum. First up on this evening's panel is Titus North, Executive Director of Citizen Power, a consumer advocacy group. Hello, Titus.
Hello, Paul. Thank you for having me.
Is there an easy way to explain what will happen on October 1st?
Well, on October 1st, an internet exchange or marketplace will open. The website is healthcare.gov. In Pennsylvania, the exchange will be operated by the federal government, and people will find a variety of healthcare plans specific to their part of the state.
In Pennsylvania, more than a half million people who do not have insurance are waiting to hear whether the Commonwealth will take advantage of a Medicaid expansion that's a part of the Affordable Care Act. How do you see this going?
Well, the expansion is primarily for people within 100 and 133% of the federal poverty level. And if there's no expansion of Medicaid, then those people will be eligible to shop in the exchange, and they'll have significant subsidies available to them. So they should be able to purchase their insurance there. However, there are some holes in the law, and so some people who might have qualified for the expanded Medicaid will not qualify to shop in the exchanges or at least to get the subsidies.
So let's clarify exactly who can shop for insurance at this marketplace opening October 1st.
Okay, well, you have to be either a U.S. citizen or a legal documented resident. You have to live in America, so someone from Pennsylvania who's living overseas would not be able to shop in the exchange, and you cannot be currently incarcerated, and those are the restrictions.
What can we find at this health exchange marketplace?
Well, first of all, you'll find out if you qualify for a government program such as Medicaid or CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program. Now, if you don't qualify for one of those, you can find out what kinds of policies are available. In Pittsburgh, there's going to be 36 plans to choose from. Other parts of the states will have even more. There are four types of policies. They're bronze, gold, silver, and platinum. They have different deductibles and copays. On average, a bronze policy is intended to pay for about 60% of your bills, and it will have the lowest premiums. Silver will pay for 70%, gold for 80%, and platinum on average for 90%. They'll have correspondingly higher premiums. There's also a catastrophic policy for young people under 30 that offers the least coverage, but it's intended as a cheap alternative. The prices for the policies offered in Pennsylvania will not be officially approved until just before the exchange is open, but we know that any plan that's in the exchange that is also offered outside the exchange must have the same premiums both in and outside the exchange. Also, the Department of Health and Human Services has released preliminary information on the least expensive plans that will be offered in the various states and cities. Policy prices in Pittsburgh appear to be among the lowest of any major city, while in Philadelphia, they'll be on the higher end.
And have we made it clear who qualifies and how they qualify for subsidies that might be available?
The qualifications for the subsidies are somewhat more restrictive than simply being able to shop in the exchange. First of all,
what subsidies are available?
For individuals, the subsidies come in two types. First, there are the premium tax credits, which lower the monthly premiums, especially for low-income people, but also for many middle-income people. These are in the form of income tax credits, but are available in advance, and they can be applied directly to the premiums. So in other words, the government would send a check directly to the insurance company for part of your premiums, and this would lower your monthly premiums that you pay directly. These subsidies put a cap on the percentage of your income that you have to pay. If you're a single person working full-time at a minimum wage job, you're expected to pay no more than 2% of your annual income for a silver plan. Meanwhile, a family of four with an annual income of $94,000 would pay no more than 9.5% of their income for a silver plan. Now, above that income level, there's not going to be any subsidies. Now, those subsidies are indexed to the silver plans. Now, you could, however, apply the same subsidy to a gold or platinum plan, but you would pay the difference. On the other hand, you could apply the subsidy to a bronze plan, which is cheaper, and you'd keep the difference. And in some cases, the difference could bring the premium to zero. The other subsidy is called cost-sharing reductions, and these are assistance paying doctors' bills, bills to the doctor, to the hospital. This is for lower-income people, people below 250% of the federal poverty level. People who qualify will see smaller doctors' bills. However, these cost-sharing reductions are only eligible for people who purchase silver plans.
So regardless of what level plan you are on, there is a subsidy. For those who qualify, there are subsidies available.
For those who qualify, there are subsidies available for the premium tax credits. And if you buy a silver plan, there are subsidies for paying your doctor's bills. In addition to the income requirements, there are also other requirements that have to be met to qualify for the subsidies. For instance, the residency requirements for immigrants are more stringent. Also, the subsidies are not available to people who are offered insurance at work that meets certain criteria. So if you have a work plan, then you're not going to be eligible for the subsidies. You could still shop in the marketplace. And unfortunately, this also applies to the dependents of such employees, even if the employer-sponsored insurance does not cover family members. And this is one of the oversights of the new system.
And so who qualifies and how do they qualify for these subsidies?
So it's based on your income. And when you go to the marketplace, you enter certain information, personal information, and the computer system that's been set up by Health and Human Services, it's connected to the IRS. It's also connected to Homeland Security, and there's supposed to be a real-time check to confirm your income data. You supply your own income data, but it gets confirmed by the IRS, and then also a confirmation of your residency or citizenship status.
So tell the truth when you apply or when you're, you know, registering for a plan is what the advice is that you would give to people.
Well, yeah, it's going to be checked. Yeah. It's going to be verified.
So don't try to get around that.
No, and if you supply, for instance, incorrect income information and you get a subsidy, then at the end of the year when it comes to file your taxes, this is going to come to light and it's going to reduce your refund, or you're going to have to pay a big lump sum to Uncle Sam to make up what you took that you weren't supposed to.
What happens if someone who can afford health insurance doesn't get coverage in 2014?
Well, there are certain groups that are exempt. American Indians are exempt. People with certain religious objections are exempt. And people who cannot afford the insurance, and there's certain criteria for what constitutes not being able to have an affordable plan, those people would be exempt from having to purchase it. But otherwise, if you don't purchase it, then come tax time, you would pay a tax penalty. And now in 2014, the tax penalty is going to be rather small, but it's going to get ramped up, and I believe it eventually could be as much as 2% of your income.
Titus North, thank you. And we'll move on to Dr. Chris Hughes, who is the Pennsylvania Director for Doctors for America. His wife also works in the healthcare field. So it comes as no surprise to hear they get a lot of questions regarding the Affordable Care Act. We've asked him to join us tonight to address some of the questions healthcare workers are receiving, and they could be questions you who are listening have on your mind. Welcome, Dr. Hughes.
Thank you, Paul.
In Pennsylvania, how affordable are the premiums?
As Titus said, they're going to be pretty good in Pittsburgh in particular. In Philadelphia, it tends to be a high insurance cost area, so it's going to be higher there. But the numbers for, you know, a family of four making $50,000, you know, with subsidies, the premiums, I think, were about just over $200 a month, which is pretty darn good. I mean, I know I quit buying my own insurance independently when it was over $20,000 a year. So the idea of 200 and some a month is pretty good.
We've seen that in some states, the cheaper the plan, the more restrictive the network of doctors. What about Pennsylvania?
We don't know yet. The plans will be rolled out this coming Tuesday on October 1st, and then we'll get our first real look at them. So right now, we don't know what's going to be in the plans. But in general, just like the health insurance you have now, there are going to be restrictions. And oftentimes, the less expensive your policy is, the less choice you're going to have in doctors and hospitals. And as you know, in the Pittsburgh market, we're having a big brouhaha about who you can go to and who you can't go to and so on. So that has nothing to do with the Affordable Care Act, but it is going on in Pittsburgh, so it may play a role in the policies that are rolled out.
One question we keep hearing is, will insurers be forced to drop some plans?
Yeah, if they don't meet the criteria set forth in the Affordable Care Act, yes, they will have to drop those. So policies that don't have the full preventive services that are in the Affordable Care Act, there's also essential benefits, they're called, that are listed by the federal government that must be in every policy. So if you have an older policy that doesn't include those things that are considered essential, like preventive services and so on, yeah, that policy will no longer qualify.
Can everyone be covered?
Theoretically, yes, but there are going to be people who fall through the cracks. Even now, you know, with Medicaid in Pennsylvania, there are many people who qualify for Medicaid that just don't know it. That will happen in the future as well. Even if we took the Medicaid expansion in Pennsylvania, there will be people who just don't know it until they get sick or something happens to them.
Who might it be that falls through the cracks?
People who have low income and just don't access the system, and they will never know that they have insurance until they go to the emergency room or go to the doctor for some emergency. So they would just not know.
And then what happens?
Well, theoretically, what happens is if they went to the emergency room, it would be found out that they do, in fact, qualify. That was actually one of the silver linings when they instituted the plan in Massachusetts many years ago. The first thing they did was put a computer in the emergency rooms testing whether the patients qualified for the existing Medicaid plan then, and they found thousands and thousands of people who qualified for Medicaid but just didn't know it. So that was a nice, happy accident.
Will it affect my health care change as opposed to my coverage?
Yes, and in a good way, I hope. The fact that if you leave, you know, listening to this or here with nothing else, just the fact that preventive services are available to you for free, full stop, no copay, that is a huge deal. That is a really big deal that the Affordable Care Act puts into place for all Americans. And one of the things American healthcare does very poorly is preventive services and preventing disease from getting to the point where it's very bad. So having the availability of preventive services, having the ability to go to your doctor is going to be a huge deal. Now, it won't be a huge deal this year or next year or the year after that, but in decades we hope that care improves. There are also many other things in the Affordable Care Act. There's the patient-centered outcomes research. Yeah, there are a lot of things that we do as physicians that we do not have a clue whether they're really beneficial or not. We think they are, and we do them, but we're not really sure because we don't have great research to tell us that. One of the things that's going to come out of this, again, not this year, not next year, but down the road, is we're going to have more studies and more research telling us whether A works better than B, works better than C. Right now, we're flying by the seat of our pants in many cases. There's a lot of things in there in the Affordable Care Act that specifically target quality in improving quality and efficiency. So, yes, I think care will change, and I think it'll change for the better.
Will there be enough doctors, nurse practitioners, and other health care providers?
There's provisions in the Affordable Care Act for that, too. And one of the things that questions I get asked is, well, geez, you know, won't there be a glut of patients and there won't be enough doctors? And my answer to that is, well, what a great problem to have. I mean, the fact that we're going to have patients, people that were not patients, that are going to get access to health care is a good thing. The Pennsylvania Academy of Family Physicians just did a survey earlier this year asking their members, are you ready and willing to take new patients? And the answer was yes. Medicare, Medicaid, yes, they're willing to take them. There are things in the Affordable Care Act that expand the number of primary care physicians. There are bonus payments, and I just checked this out the other day. One of the things that was supposed to happen in the Affordable Care Act was that Medicaid payments for primary doctors was going to go up to the same level of Medicare, which is a big difference. In Pennsylvania, they're getting paid like 30 cents on the dollar compared to Medicare for primary care physicians. That's already kicked in. As of this July, your family physician, if you're on Medicaid, is now getting bonuses to take care of those patients. There's other bonuses for information technology and things like that. Just in general, one of the problems we have in the United States is we are top-heavy on specialists and light on primary care. So over time, again, this is decades in the making, we hope to transfer or change our system so that we have more primary care, more primary medical homes for people to go to, and a little bit less on the high-end specialty physicians.
All right, here's something that a lot of people are wondering about. Do you, Dr. Hughes, see employers dropping coverage or reducing workers' hours to avoid the mandate?
Well, if you look at the trajectory of the past 10 or 20 years on those topics, that's been going on for decades now. Health insurance costs have been rising so fast that employers are just ducking at this point. They're just trying to do their best, but the insurance premiums have gone up so fast and so high that they're looking for ways to get out of it. They're not bad people. They're just trying to make sure their businesses work. So the answer is that, yes, that'll probably continue. But, again, some of the things we have to do are going to take place over years and decades, and that is bending the cost curve is the wonky phrase. But it means reducing the growth of medical expenditures and insurance premiums. So I think most large businesses will continue to insure their employees because if you want good employees, you're going to have to offer them that benefit. Small businesses now have a new opportunity. It's called the Small Business Health Insurance Options Program, SHOP, that's going to come online very soon. And it will offer small businesses the opportunity to buy in a similar exchange to the exchange for individuals, but it's for businesses. One of the problems with small businesses is they've paid a premium for their health insurance, about 15 to 20% higher than a large business would. So with the insurance exchanges for business, their premiums for their employees should go down. So hopefully that'll offer them more opportunity to buy insurance.
So you're saying this helps small business?
Yes, and if you have less than 25 employees, there are subsidies to help you pay for the insurance for your employees.
What does Governor Corbett's proposal to bring federal Medicaid expansion dollars to the Commonwealth, but on his terms, mean for Pennsylvanians?
Yeah, we don't know yet. We don't know the details of his proposal, and we don't know if the federal government's going to approve it, frankly. So we don't know the answer to that question. I know that my organization and the Pennsylvania Academy of Family Physicians and College of Physicians, which is internists, have all urged the governor to take the Medicaid expansion because it is a great deal for Pennsylvania in terms of economic growth, in terms of covering patients, which is what we're primarily concerned about. The proposal that I've heard a little bit about involves using private insurance to fill that gap. But I worry about imposing too many requirements and too many co-pays and a lot of things that he seems to be proposing, and they worry me that we're not going to give the people who really need it most a fair shake.
How long do you think it'll take before it's sorted out? We've heard things like it could take months.
That'd be optimistic, I would think. Yeah, I don't know.
And what about the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, it seems the governor's hanging his hat on that if we can expand access for children, placate us? I don't know. I don't feel that that's, I mean, certainly wouldn't turn it down if that was the only alternative, but I think the Medicaid expansion offers a much better alternative for families as opposed to just children. Children need their parents to be healthy too. I think expansion for families and adults, not just children, is in order at this point.
Thank you, Dr. Hughes. It's a public forum on affordable health care here on Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The Affordable Care Act will impact people in different ways. In this segment, we're going to focus on women and how will the overhaul of the healthcare system affect their access to services. Joining us to address these issues is Rachel Dingfelder, Development Coordinator for the Midwife Center for Birth and Women's Health. Rachel, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Will the ACA have an impact on women's coverage?
Yes, and it already has. So right now the ACA mandated that women can get preventative services in their private insurance plans without co-pays. So when we're looking at the marketplaces that will, or the exchanges that will be in the marketplace, those plans should cover services like annual exams, birth control, prenatal care, and breastfeeding support. It's also important to note that in the marketplace plans, there's the plans cannot discriminate based on gender identity. So if a transgender person needed to access gynae or prenatal care, they would be able to do so. So as far as the marketplace exchanges go, they're hopefully going to offer coverage to women who don't qualify for Medicaid, but who also can't afford private insurance. So we're hoping that it kind of closes the gap for those women. For example, if a woman is on a medical assistance gynae plan and she goes to reapply and she maybe makes too much money to get on that plan, and maybe she was getting birth control and getting her annual exams, hopefully she'll be able to get a plan through the marketplace that's affordable not create like a lapse in coverage by losing medical assistance, but also not being able to afford a private plan. So we're hoping to see that.
What else would you like to see in terms of the ACA accomplish with regard to women's health? What are some of the primary issues?
Well, we would like to see women obtain the health care they need, whether it's prenatal care. We would like them to get prenatal care in a timely manner. We would like them to get covered for preventative services before, in between, and after pregnancies. We'd also like to see the Affordable Care Act reduce disparities in health outcomes for women of color and also for women with low to moderate incomes. And one of the ways to do this is just through increased access, so we're hoping that the Affordable Care Act does that. Another potential for impact, which we just talked about, was Medicaid expansion. And, studies show that women who are getting care before they have a baby end up being healthier. So if Medicaid is expanded to cover women of childbearing age, not just women when they're pregnant, that could be a good thing.
And information and sorting through all of the myriad information that is available about this is certainly something that is important. What are groups like the Midwife Center doing to help women become better informed about the changes that the ACA could bring?
Well, we're actually on a coalition along with the PA Health Access Network. And the point of the coalition is to help inform the public about the Affordable Care Act and also advocate for women's needs. We've also, at the Midwife Center, included articles about the Affordable Care Act in our newsletter. We've posted on Facebook, and we've done a lot of like in-office education for our clients. So when they come in asking about coverage, we try to give them as much information as we know as time goes on and we learn more.
What kind of questions are you getting?
Like the example I mentioned before, in the case of a woman who's going to start making a little bit too much money for Medicaid, a woman like that is often left wondering how she's going to get her care covered. So we do get a lot of women wondering how they're going to pay for their gynae preventative services.
And what are some of the unknown factors for women's coverage under the ACA?
Well, we know that preventative care will be covered. We know that prenatal care is included in one of the 10 essential health benefits, which you mentioned before. But what we don't know is if a woman goes into her annual exam and she's diagnosed with an issue, if she needs follow-up testing, we don't know if that's covered. We know the annual birth control STI testing's covered, but beyond that, we're a little unclear about if she'll get that covered through the exchanges. We're hoping.
And what are women's groups such as the Midwife Center doing to help women become better informed about the changes that the Affordable Care Act could bring? You've mentioned trying to get information out. Are there things that you're doing that you would like people to be aware of?
That the Midwife Center specifically is doing?
Yes.
Yeah, well, like I said, we try to post in our newsletter about how it affects midwives and birth centers, how it could affect gynecological care. There's also another group called Raising Women's Voices, and they have a local chapter in Pittsburgh called New Voices Pittsburgh Women of Color for Reproductive Justice. So, and they're, like I said, the local partner of Raising Women's Voices. But if you go on that website, there's a lot of information about enrollment, Medicaid expansion, things like that. We've also been getting a lot of great information from the National Partnership for Women and Families, so we try to share that with our clients when we have it. Also the Kaiser Family Foundation and the Maternity Care Coalition. And that's all great information just for the general public. It's often in plain language, really easy to understand.
You know that as much as you've tried to prepare people for the changes and get the word out, get information out, that once October 1st rolls around, there's probably going to be an avalanche of questions and more people coming to you and saying, what's going on? I'm confused. So how will you deal with what comes up October 1st and beyond?
Well, we'll try to guide people to the resources that I mentioned. We'll direct them to healthcare.gov and encourage them to go in and see if they qualify for any subsidies. Look at the different options for plans, the different monthly prices and what they cover. It'll mostly be directing them towards, I guess, healthcare.gov and other resources.
What are the plans in the marketplace supposed to cover regarding prenatal care? And will they change under the Affordable Care Act?
They will change. So before the Affordable Care Act, prenatal care was often inadequate because a lot of the plans that women bought through the individual private insurance market left women paying a lot of money even after they received the care. So the exchanges will hopefully cover prenatal care, whether a woman needs 8 prenatal visits or 16. And they'll hopefully cover the different screenings women need to get, ultrasounds. Hopefully they'll cover the birth location that women want, whether it's at a hospital or a birth center like ours.
And will access to birth control and gynecological services change under the ACA?
Under the ACA, women should not have copays for gynecological care and birth control. That includes the marketplace plans. So there should be more women covered in general and getting affordable options.
Any other advice for women who are seeking health plans?
Well, of course, women should look at what the monthly premium is. They should look and see if there's cost sharing like deductibles or copays. And then they should also make sure that the plans offer family planning care. Well, women visits like annual exams, cervical cancer screenings, breast cancer screenings. Also, one thing I didn't mention before that's kind of wrapped up in prenatal care is breastfeeding, counseling, and supplies. That's another big thing they should look for. And if they're pregnant and they're looking to become pregnant, they should look at how comprehensive the benefits are. They should check if the plan restricts their access to midwives, birth centers, and obtaining a doula. And they should also look at how the plan, how they'll be able to get their new baby coverage once the baby's born.
Very sound advice. Thank you, Rachel Dingfelder.
Thank you.
It's a public forum on affordable health care here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. We are addressing concerns about the overhaul of the healthcare system. Seniors have been one of the groups targeted most by misinformation about the upcoming changes. They, like everybody else, are confused about their options, not sure where to get help qualifying for services to afford medications or reduced coverage. And they'll also have the opportunity to change their Medicare coverage coming up during Medicare's open enrollment period, October 15th through December 7th. So here to address concerns relevant to seniors is Erin Neinhauser, Education and Outreach Director of the Pennsylvania Access Health Network. Erin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much.
How does Medicare work and how will it change under the ACA?
That's a great question. And I think it is so important to really kind of get back to square one because there has been a lot of misinformation, targeting seniors. So Medicare works really well. Medicare has really been the foundation of middle class security since it was signed into law back in 1965. It covers about 50 million Americans, both seniors and people with disabilities. And it does that without regard to your income or your health status. And that's really important because a lot of the folks that are covered by Medicare, over half of all Medicare patients have 3 or more more chronic conditions, and about half get by on incomes of about $23,000 a year. So Medicare really meets a critical need, and there are four different parts to it. There's Part A, which covers hospitalization and hospital services. Part B covers doctor's visits and medical equipment, outpatient care. Part D offers prescription drug coverage, and Part C is actually a different way to receive Medicare benefits through through private insurance companies that participate in the Medicare system. So there's four different parts. They all work together to provide seniors with care, but it can be very complex, and that's why it's really important that seniors know about local resources that are available to help them sort through their Medicare choices and make a good decision every year during open enrollment, which, as you said, is coming up on October 15th.
Right, October 15th through December 7th. What new benefits does the ACA add to Medicare?
Well, the Affordable Care Act recognizes that Medicare works well, but that it, in a lot of ways, could work better. You know, a lot of seniors are struggling with the cost of prescription drugs, especially seniors that were more middle income that would get caught in the Part D donut hole coverage gap. So, you know, when Congress added the prescription coverage to Medicare, they also put in place this crazy coverage gap where once you spend a certain amount of money on your medications, you, as a senior, are responsible for 100% of those costs until you come out on the other side of that gap. So for a lot of folks, especially, you know, people that had chronic conditions or maybe a couple that both had one or two illnesses, it could, you know, they could end up spending $2,000 or $3,000 out of pocket, and that's a lot of money for someone on a fixed income. So the Affordable Care Act works to close the donut hole. It does that by putting in place new discounts that started taking effect in 2011. So this year, when someone enters that coverage gap, a 52.5% discount on brand name medications is automatically applied. It's 21% discount on generics, and those discounts are automatically applied before someone pays for their medications. Since these discounts have been in place, Pennsylvania seniors have saved over $392 million on their prescription medications, and that is a lot of money. Last year, the average discount was $753. That's a whole lot for someone on a fixed income. That's almost an entire winter of heating bills or a couple years of Christmas presents. So those discounts have already made a big difference. One of the other things that the Affordable Care Act does in terms of making sure that seniors have the tools they need to stay well is it makes preventive services available for free with no copays or cost sharing under Part B. So for seniors enrolled in traditional Medicare in Part B, they can now get things like an annual flu shot, colonoscopies, mammograms, help to stop smoking, an annual wellness visit with their doctor, really important services available with no copays or cost sharing as a way to make sure that seniors are able to catch problems before they become very serious and also very costly to treat.
So you're saying that the preventative measures that are part of this are a big help?
Yeah, hugely important. And, you know, for a lot of people, if, you know, if their copay for a screening, a mammogram, a colonoscopy was going to be $50 or $100, that might make their decision of whether or not to get it that year. So this is over a million seniors in Pennsylvania have taken advantage of the new preventive services. And it's just really important. When folks can get in the door, like Dr. Hughes was saying, and catch problems before they become very serious. One of the other benefits is nutrition counseling for folks that are managing a chronic illness like diabetes. That's hugely important in terms of, you know, making sure someone can stay healthy and also, you know, help to maybe reduce some of the medications they're on. So very important to make sure seniors have preventive care.
So a lot of things people didn't have before, they will have now.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of something Medicare has now that it didn't before was almost $14.9 billion has been recovered because the law beefs up enforcement and investigation of providers that were defrauding the Medicare system. So it stiffened penalties, it stepped up enforcement, and for every dollar the law invested in rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse in the system, $7.90 has come back into the Medicare trust fund. So that's also really important. Because of the reforms the law makes to Medicare, Medicare is 8 years more solvent than before the law. So that's another really important benefit just for the Medicare system overall.
And I mentioned that seniors are one of the groups targeted most by misinformation. What are some of the, in those tall policy weeds, what are some of the things that are lurking that seniors should be aware of?
Well, the biggest thing that seniors should understand is just the different ways to get your Medicare coverage. I talk to a lot of seniors that aren't sure if they have a supplement in traditional Medicare or if they're enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan. And that's across the country, only about 25% of seniors are enrolled in these private insurance plans. But in this area, it's much, much higher. It's probably more like 75%. And there are plans that are offered by UPMC, Highmark, Humana. You know, they have names like Security Blue or UPMC for Life. And those plans can change from year to year. Before the Affordable Care Act, they did change from year to year. They have to cover the basic benefits that Medicare would cover, but they can charge a senior an additional copay on top of their, an additional premium on top of their premiums for Part B. They could restrict you to a certain provider network. They could, you know, put in place higher copays and cost sharing. So, all the plans are different. All the Medicare Advantage plans, because they're offered by private insurers, are different. And so seniors should just know what they're getting into when they sign up for one. One of the things that the Affordable Care Act did, so I should take a step back and say that Medicare Advantage plans were introduced as a way to try and keep a lid on costs in the Medicare system. So private insurance companies came to Medicare and they said, you know, hey, we think we can provide Medicare benefits more in a more cost-effective way than you can. So Medicare gave private insurance companies a subsidy to do that. So before the Affordable Care Act, when Highmark or UPMC signed up a senior into one of their Medicare Advantage plans, they would get premiums from that senior, but they would also get a check from Medicare for about $1,000 for each person they enrolled, with the thinking that they could provide benefits in a cheaper way. But the evidence showed that that actually wasn't happening. Medicare Advantage plans were costing the Medicare system about 15% more per person to provide roughly the same level of benefits. So the Medicare Advantage plans overall were becoming a drag on the Medicare system and on Medicare's long-term finances. So the Affordable Care Act ends those extra subsidies. It says if you're an insurance company and you want to participate, that's just fine, but we're not going to give you extra payments to do that. So there was some concern about whether or not that would lead to plans dropping out and not participating or raising costs. But nationally, what we've seen is that costs in Medicare Advantage plans have actually come down by about 10%, and enrollment has continued to go up. So that's one, concern that was used to kind of whip up a lot of fear, but that hasn't been borne out by evidence. Seniors still have a lot of choices for Medicare Advantage plans, and costs have come down nationally.
Aaron, thank you for clarifying all of that. And would you tell us about the APPRISE program here in Allegheny County?
Yeah, absolutely. So APPRISE is a really wonderful resource for seniors in the county. They're there to help folks understand their Medicare choices and really make a good decision for them. A lot of seniors end up getting enrolled in a plan from an insurance company directly, which might not be the best thing because obviously that company is wanting to sell their product, not necessarily help seniors understand the full range of their choices. So here in Allegheny County, APPRISE can be reached, and I'll just give the phone number. It's 412-661-1438. And APPRISE is operated through the Agency on Aging. So every single county in Pennsylvania has an APPRISE counselor. They're there to help seniors during open enrollment time. They'll make individual appointments to sit down with someone and help them figure out what's the best coverage for them based on their health needs and budget. And they've got a lot of open enrollment events coming up. The one closest to this area is October 29th. At St. Thomas More Church in Bethel Park from 1 o'clock until 5 o'clock on October 29th. And that's somewhere where a senior can go and meet with someone, get some counseling, and figure out if they could get a better deal on their Medicare coverage, if they could switch to another plan that might be more affordable, and just get a better understanding of what's out there.
Aaron Neinhauser, Education and Outreach Director of Pennsylvania Access Health Network, thank you. And at this point, we are going to open up the questioning to our audience. We also have questions that have been submitted by our listeners via email. Our audience is gathered here at our studios at 90.5 WESA, so we will give them the first chance. And the first question comes from Fran, who is from Shadyside. So let's go to Fran in the first row with the first question. Hi, Fran.
Hi, Paul, and thank you, panel. My question actually builds on something, Aaron, you were talking about, but not for Medicare. So what resources are the federal, local, or state governments being made available to help people navigate through their choices of the exchanges and help them make good decisions?
That's an excellent question. Healthcare.gov is the place to go to learn about the law, and also on October 1st to submit an application, see how much financial help you'll be eligible for, and choose a plan. I also want to give the number for healthcare.gov's helpline. It's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's 1-800-318-2596. Again, it's 1-800-318-2596. I've called the hotline multiple times. You know, if I have a question, I'm out doing a lot of town halls and outreach, and if I get a question, call up the hotline. It takes, you know, less than 10 seconds to get connected with a live person based in the United States, very helpful and patient. That's really the best place to get questions answered right away. Here locally, there are a couple of organizations that can actually sit down with folks and counsel them about, you know, how health insurance works, how to make a good decision. All of the federally qualified health centers, so the local health clinics here in the area, the Squirrel Hill Health Center, the Northside Christian Health Center, all the local health centers will have a navigator on site to be able to help folks figure out their choices and enroll in coverage. Also, my organization, the Pennsylvania Health Access Network, we are a certified application counselor, which means that we're not funded to do any of the work, but we're going to be helping folks you know, go through the process. So we're also going to be meeting with individuals. Consumer Health Coalition is also going to do that. So what we can do is provide folks, you know, here with information about, you know, in every single county where people can go to get hands-on help. But also, if you go to healthcare.gov, you'll be able to put in your zip code and pull up a list of all the organizations, you know, right in your neighborhood that can help people apply. So that's really the best place to go. It's localhelp.healthcare.gov.
I want to jump in and amplify something.
Sure,
I
was, go ahead, Chris.
I was on the healthcare.gov website last night preparing, you know, looking over some things, and I noticed that there was a little chat icon in the bottom right-hand corner staring at me, and I had this obscure question about grandfathered employee-sponsored insurance plans, and I thought, what the heck? I'll give it a try. I was amazed. I mean, within a minute, I was connected with somebody. Within another minute, they had the answer. They sent me the link to the question I had. So I highly recommend healthcare.gov and look for that little chat icon in there. You know, if you're phone friendly, do the phone thing. But I loved the fact that I could type in exactly what I wanted and get the answer immediately.
And that's Dr. Christopher Hughes, who is the Pennsylvania Director for Doctors for America. And for those of you just tuning in to our public forum on the Affordable Care Act, we also have on our panel Rachel Dingfelder, Development Coordinator for the Midwife Center for Birth and Women's Health, Titus North, Executive Director of Citizen Power, a consumer advocacy group, and Aaron Neinhauser, Education and Outreach Director of Pennsylvania Access Health Network. And we have audience questions for them, as well as questions from our listeners who have emailed us. And Alice in Pittsburgh asks, as a Medicare Advantage person, what are the number of insurance companies available in Pennsylvania to choose from? I think as consumers, we have to step away from Highmark and UPMC. And again, that's from Alice in Pittsburgh. And I'll throw that up to anybody. It looks like Aaron wants to answer that.
Sure.
Go ahead, Aaron.
There are a lot of different plans available in terms of Medicare Advantage. And if you go to Medicare.gov or call 1-800-MEDICARE, you can find out all the plans that are available. You put in your zip code, and a list will populate based on plans that are in the area. I know different companies like Humana, United. So there are national companies that offer Medicare Advantage plans in addition to Highmark and UPMC. And that is something that both folks signing up for Medicare Advantage and people looking for coverage in the marketplace need to be aware of, is whether or not UPMC or Highmark will restrict you to a certain provider network. And because, you know, that situation is unresolved and not looking like a good resolution, people need to be aware of that. And if they do have a relationship with a UPMC or a Highmark doctor, to factor that into their choice. But I would definitely, again, recommend folks, and to Alice, you know, give a prize a call, sit down. They'll help you. You know, they're a source for objective, unbiased information, which is so critical when you're making your coverage choices. So again, the apprise number is 412-661-1438.
And I do want to mention, too, that we'll have a link to the information on our website at wesa.fm. So be sure to go there as well for anything that you want to find out more about with regard to the Affordable Care Act. Let's go to another member of our live studio audience. We have Rick from Robinson Township. Rick, go ahead with your question. Hi, Rick.
Hi. My question has been largely addressed, but it was how the new act is going to affect our costs in general in the future.
Okay, Titus, go ahead with your response.
Okay, well, health insurance premiums in Pennsylvania and around the country have been rising quite fast over a number of years. The rate of inflation for health insurance premiums has been pretty much double the rate of inflation for everything else. It's been rising faster than everything except for college tuitions. And the Affordable Care Act really doesn't do anything to stem that. It doesn't address the core problems that are causing the increase in premiums. The language of the act assumes that premiums are going to continue to rise. And these various subsidies that I mentioned earlier are indexed to the increase in premiums, but they're not indexed in such a way that they're going to help the consumer keep pace with paying the premiums. They're indexed in such a way as to limit the exposure of the federal government deficit to the premium hikes. So initially, in 2014, there will be some people falling through the cracks. There will be cracks there. But what's going to happen is as time goes by, as long as premiums continue to increase, actually the cracks are going to increase as well, the way it's currently indexed. So you can expect that premiums are probably going to continue to rise and that the subsidies that are available to help you with the premiums are not going to keep pace with those rises.
Dr. Hughes, you wanted to add something to this.
Yeah, I think that's partially true, but there are, you know, parts of the Affordable Care Act that are specifically designed to, as I said, bend the curve, the wonky term for keeping those costs from rising as fast as they have been over the past decades. One of the buzzwords you've probably heard are accountable care organizations. These are organizations of physicians, hospitals, and what have you, whoever's needed to provide a service, that are designed to provide higher quality at lower costs, and the accountable care organization then gets a bonus for performing that. So the idea behind an accountable care organization would be, say, for heart bypass surgery, to provide everything at a lower cost, at a higher quality, and thus reduce the cost curve. I mentioned the patient-centered outcomes research center before as trying to find the best things that work. There's also something called the Center for Medicare Innovation. And there was an interesting article written a couple years ago about how in the United States, when agriculture first became modern in the early part of the last century, the Department of Agriculture threw all kinds of things against the wall to try to figure out what would work to make agriculture better in this country. And what they found was this thing here worked, and this thing here worked, and this one didn't, and this one didn't. And so over the years, they put together the things that worked. And obviously, we have an amazing agricultural community now. The Center for Medicare Innovation is trying to do the same things. They're trying to find the projects, trying to identify the processes and the procedures that will reduce cost and improve quality. I know they're looking at hundreds of things at this point, and they have many projects out there already underway and that seem to be working. Patient-centered medical homes is a good example. Having patients have a medical home where they go primarily for their resources instead of going to their cardiologist and their oncologist and their pulmonologist and so on. Having a patient-centered medical home where a primary care person can take care of their needs without going to the high-priced specialist for everything they need. So I think those things will bend the cost curve over time. We'll find out together. But I think to say that there's nothing in there that will help that, I think, is not correct.
Yes, Aaron Neinhauser.
I also just wanted to jump in into Rick's question. There are two really important things that the law does to make sure that we throw the brakes on the cost of private health insurance. Before the Affordable Care Act, there were absolutely no standards around what insurance companies did with the money that we sent to them in premiums. And the Affordable Care Act finally put some standards in place around that and said that now at least 80 cents of every dollar we send to an insurance company in premiums has to go to actually pay our medical bills and not to things like, you know, putting 20 commercials up during every Steelers game and the kind of things that insurance companies, spend our money on today to make sure that we're getting better value for our premium dollars. And a big problem that folks with private insurance see every year is that our rates often go up, but the quality of our coverage doesn't go up with it. So because the law requires all new insurance plans to cover the essential health benefits, things like prescriptions and mental and behavioral health coverage, maternity care, a lot of things that aren't covered in plans today, we're actually getting better value for the money we're spending on health care. We're getting what we pay for. One other really important protection that I wanted to mention is bringing some sunshine and some transparency to how rates are set and approved. Rate increases are a huge problem for folks that buy coverage on the individual market and for small businesses. For a small business, if one employee gets sick, rates could go up 50% the next year, 70%. And for people enrolled in individual market plans, rates would go up year after year, and the people affected by those rate increases would have absolutely no voice in the process or no way to say, hey, we don't think this is justified. How can you raise our rates 20% just on a whim? So the Affordable Care Act says that if an insurance company wants to raise rates above 10%, they actually have to open their books and show that it's related to actual medical claims cost increasing and not just, you know, a desire to pull in a little bit more because, you know, they can get away with it. And that's already cut both the number and the size of rate increases across the country. So just in the last 2 years, health insurance costs in private insurance and Medicare and in Medicaid have risen at the slowest rate in 50 years. So we're starting to see, you know, the speeding train of healthcare costs start to slow down, and it has to slow down before it turns around. So, you know, I think there is hopeful evidence that the law is going to bring down both health insurance costs and the cost of delivering healthcare, as Dr. Hughes talked about.
Go ahead, Dr. Hughes.
Let's not forget about the exchanges themselves. Competition is a good thing. You know, we have plans that we can look at. We're going to have 36 in our area, bronze, silver, gold, and platinum, that we're going to be able to look at, and we're going to be looking at them side by side. One of the things that we found out as these states roll out their individual exchanges and the federal government rolls out theirs is the premiums are coming in significantly lower than the Congressional Budget Office projected. So the fact that these insurance plans now have to compete with each other on a level playing field is going to bring down prices. You know, chaos is not choice, you know, but what we had before was chaos. You didn't know what was in your insurance plan, really. I mean, I know that I got a headache every time we had an open enrollment period and I had to figure out which plan to choose. Now we're going to have some sort of order so that when we make a choice, we'll be able to compare plans in the bronze and plans in the silver and so on, and the insurers will have to compete. So that is going to lower prices, too, and already seems to be doing that.
I wanted to follow up on something that you mentioned earlier, Dr. Hughes, regarding the evolution of the Department of Agriculture. There are a lot of people who are concerned about what will happen after October 1st, and many pundits saying that the sky is going to fall and that it's going to be a disaster. What it sounds like you're saying is that if there are problems with the new system, they can be solved and things can be tweaked.
That's true. That's a little separate point. The point I was making with the Department of Agriculture was that all the things that are available to us to try to reduce costs and improve quality are going to be hit or miss, and we're going to try a bunch of things, and the Center for Medicare Innovation and other agencies are going to be doing all kinds of things like that. So as far as the healthcare law itself goes, yeah, I mean, you know, Medicare, 1965, has been amended I don't know how many hundreds of times. I mean, every legislation, and especially a big piece of legislation, is going to require tweaks. So I think the thing to do is not to throw out the baby with the bathwater, but try to make it better. I mean, if there are things that you object to in the Affordable Care Act, and there are things that physicians object to and other people object to, the answer isn't to trash it. The answer is to fix it and make it better and make it work for as many people as we possibly can.
Titus?
Yes. There's been a lot of important points made. And Citizen Power, we've just released a 3-year study that had been funded by the Pittsburgh Foundation entitled Pennsylvania's New Health Insurance Landscape, PPACA, and its Impact on Regulation. And as healthcare advocates, we actually support a single-payer system. But with regards to the Affordable Care Act, we didn't support it, and we're also not involved in trying to repeal it. Really, we don't have a dog in that fight. And there were great efforts were made in the Affordable Care Act to establish a marketplace where people would be able to shop and make good, you know, apples-to-apples comparisons. However, there are a number of holes in the system, and I try to point those out as well. And when you go and shop in the exchange, you're going to see, you know, a silver plan and a silver plan, and both are supposed to pay 70% of your medical bills. And on the surface of it, that would seem fine, and you just choose the one that has the lower premium. But there's also the, you know, when you see on TV an advertisement for a sofa, and it's 30% off, and another sofa at another, or the same sofa at another store is 40% off. Which one's cheaper? Well, you don't know unless you know what the price of the sofa was in the first place. And with deficiencies, and I've had conversations with both the Pennsylvania Insurance Department and Health and Human Services about this, and one of the deficiencies of the health exchanges is that we don't have information on the prices that have been negotiated between the various insurance companies and the various providers. So, for instance, here UPMC is a huge provider. What it pays for a service to Medicare is not the same as what it pays to Highmark, and it's not the same as what it pays to Aetna. And when you shop on the exchange and you're comparing two policies, you're not going to know what the price agreements between that policy, that plan, and UPMC are.
So how do you fix that?
So
what is your recommendation?
So that is, there's an increased need for transparency. The agreements between the insurance companies and the providers need to be made public. And one of the recommendations that we make in our study was to have more authority for the Pennsylvania Insurance Department to review, and also much more transparency. And we, if people are expected to make decisions, and these decisions are going to be extremely complicated because there's so much mathematics involved, but they need to have this kind of information on the networks themselves and the discounts.
So
the
perhaps
network discounts.
Going forward, you need sunshine laws to help people understand more, get more information so they can better understand what's going on.
Well, yeah, and it's, you need much more sunshine, you need much more transparency, and even then it's going to be very complicated. There are systems of the navigators and the certified application counselors, and Citizen Powers applied to be a certified application counselor, and we have a great deal of information on our website, citizenpower.com. So the information and the counseling is going to be very important. And, you know, we're not interested in supporting or opposing the system in general, but we are very interested in whatever system we have in helping consumers get get the best benefits that they can from the system.
And we're certainly getting a lot of information tonight that we're hashing through. Again, be sure to visit our website for information at wesa.fm. You can find out more there about any questions you might have regarding the Affordable Care Act. There are no shortage of questions, including from members of our audience. We have Dave from Ambridge in the audience. And Dave, go ahead. Where's Dave? There he is. Dave, welcome, and go ahead with your comment or question.
First, I want to thank WESA for hosting this forum. It's really important that folks get accurate, reliable, reality-based information. That kind of leads into my question, which is just getting some input from the panel about dealing with misinformation. There's been an absolute avalanche of misinformation, smear and fear from opponents of the healthcare reform law, and I want to just get some, response about how folks in the community can deal with this, because you talk to so many folks and they're absolutely convinced of something that's 100% false.
I mean, I'd be happy to jump
Go ahead,
on that
Erin.
Question. So Pennsylvania Health Access Network, we've been holding a series of town halls and community events, and yesterday I was in two different parts of Allegheny County, Northern Allegheny County, up in Shaler and McCandless, and also down in Washington County. So I've been talking to a lot of people that have heard all kinds of things about the Affordable Care Act. And, what I always tell people is that, how you feel about politics or the president is one thing. You know, how you feel about things should be based on real information and not, scare tactics and that kind of stuff. But my takeaway message always when I'm doing town halls and outreach is that you can't make good decisions with bad information. We all want to make good decisions about our health and the health of our families. And the time is to put all that other stuff aside and really focus on what's important. So, you know, I just try to work to connect folks with healthcare.gov, with the hotline, and just remind people that, you know, the Affordable Care Act, you know, the number one question I get is, you know, what's Obamacare all about? What's the Affordable Care Act all about? And I say, you know, it's about three things. It's about security, value, and a level playing field. You know, it's about making sure that your coverage is secure no matter where you work, how much you earn, or if you've been sick in the past. It's about making sure that we're getting good value for the money that we're spending on healthcare, whether we're spending it as taxpayers in Medicare and Medicaid or as people paying for private insurance. And it's about a level playing field, being able to make real choices and enjoy the benefits of competition and insurance companies playing by some rules of the road, treating us fairly, not cutting our coverage when we get sick, not charging women more than men, or treating pregnancy as a pre-existing condition. All of those things will be illegal come January 1st, 2014. So it's really going to be a watershed day for millions of Americans who, you know, this is going to be the first time that millions of people are getting health insurance for the first time in their lives. So I just really stress how important it is to focus on what's important, connect with accurate information, and make sure, because a lot of the folks that stand to be helped most by the law have either only heard misinformation or negative things. And, you know, we want to make sure that no one is blocked, you know, from accessing the law's benefits and protections and coverage.
And to your point, we have an email question from a listener, Alisa, who sent in this two-part question. I currently have a guaranteed issue plan for high-risk individuals with serious health problems who cannot get medically underwritten policies because of pre-existing conditions. What can I and other Pennsylvanians in my situation do to keep our guaranteed issue plans? Secondly, what if opponents of the act succeed in repealing or defunding the act in the future? Titus North.
Yeah, well, the plans that are going to be offered in the exchange, in effect, are all guaranteed issue. There's no pre-existing condition exclusions for them. So if you have one of these guaranteed issue plans currently, one of the existing ones, you're likely paying an extremely high premium. And there's a very, very strong chance that if you go and shop in the exchanges, you're going to find a lower premium. And those policies...
Well, that's an important point. So because one of the things that we have heard, and we have the people here, including you, Titus, who can clarify this, is that, sure, you may have a pre-existing condition and now you're covered, that you cannot be excluded because of a pre-existing condition, but that in some cases you could very well end up paying a lot to get insurance if you do have a pre-existing condition. You'll get the insurance, but there'll be a lot of out-of-pocket expense.
Well, I mean, if you have a condition that's keeping you going to the doctors very often, then you're going to be paying your full deductible, and you might pay up to the maximum of the policy. But the maximum is going to be that you would pay in a given year in out-of-pocket costs is capped at about $6,500. So there is a small loophole regarding pre-existing conditions. It's known as wellness promotion plans or wellness promotion clauses. But that's not going to exclude people from getting the health insurance premiums. It just means that they might not qualify for a particular discount, might wind up paying up to 30 or 50% more than other people. But it's not going to prevent these people with pre-existing conditions from buying the policies. So, I mean, there's going to be winners and losers in this. I think in the first year, there's going to be more winners than losers. And some of the winners, the big winners, are going to be people with pre-existing conditions who either have not been able to get insurance or have very high-cost guaranteed issue policies. These people will be winners. There are going to be some people who will face higher premiums in different categories, though.
Who are the losers? Who loses out here?
The losers... So within the exchanges, premiums can be set on three criteria. One is your age. Second is the region that you live. And the third is whether or not you smoke. So if you are 65, you can be expect you can pay up to three times as much as a younger person. If you're a smoker, that can there can be an additional 50%, so that gets it up to 4.5 times as much as a young non-smoker. And what we've seen in the prices that just got released is there's a great deal of variation by region. Now, fortunately, Pittsburgh is a low-cost region. But if you are a 60-year-old smoker and you're living in Indianapolis, Indiana, or Jackson, Mississippi, the premiums are going to be very high. And if you are making just over the amount that the subsidies cut off at, which would be about $46,000 for an individual, about $92,000 for a family of four, if you're in that category and you're just over the edge, you won't qualify for any subsidies, and the premiums will be too expensive. They might already be too expensive. A lot of these people might not be affording insurance today, but they won't. There won't be any help for them to get insurance. And as I said before, some of these cracks are likely to grow as years go by.
Well, I think it's worth remembering, this is Chris Hughes, that the first part of this bill is called the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And I think we often lose sight of the fact of all the patient protections that are in there. And one of the key ones is that we as a society have said that we're now willing to subsidize people, cross-subsidize each other, the healthy paying for the sick, and saying that no child or adult with a pre-existing condition can be shut out of health care. No family should go bankrupt because of a health care bill. Women should not pay more premiums for insurance than men. There are a whole host of trade-offs in this bill, but some of the strongest parts are the patient protection parts. You know, those of us who are in healthcare, we see the disasters day in and day out of people not getting access to care in a timely fashion. They put off getting their chest x-ray or going to see their doctor when they're coughing or getting a screening test, et cetera, et cetera. We see this every day, day in and day out. Every nurse, every doctor you know can tell you stories of disasters in the healthcare system. So it is worth emphasizing that whatever else you say about this, patients are going to be protected far more than they ever have been in this country, and that's a wonderful thing.
What about the second part of Elisa's question? And this is something that we've been hearing about a lot. It's a fluid situation, but it keeps coming up that there are some members of Congress who want to tie defunding of the Affordable Care Act to any number of things. So when she asks, what if opponents of the act succeed in repealing or defunding the act in the future, she is concerned, echoing the concerns of others. What is the answer to that question?
The answer is to not let it happen. You know, people have a lot to lose if the Affordable Care Act is repealed or defunded. And it's just incredible to me, you know, having met so many people who, you know, have worked hard all their lives and then maybe are in their 50s or early 60s, lost their job, lost their health insurance, and have absolutely no way to get coverage in a way that's affordable. And that's who the law is there to protect. So it's just incredible to me that opponents of the law would, you know, threaten our economy, shut down the government to stop, you know, people in these situations from getting health care. And I think, you know, most of the law is already in place. Protections around children with pre-existing conditions not being denied coverage. Insurance companies phasing out the imposition of annual and lifetime limits on folks' coverage. So if you have a loved one in your family with a serious illness, and I have a little niece that has cystic fibrosis, before the Affordable Care Act, an insurance company could say, we don't care if you've paid your premiums for 5 years or 10 years faithfully, we're not going to pay any more than $200,000 for your medical care for the year or $1 million for a lifetime. And when you have a serious illness, you can hit those limits very, very quickly. And for folks in those situations, they would be faced with a choice of either stopping treatment, which is not really an option, declaring bankruptcy, or looking for other insurance, which of course they couldn't get because of, you know, that person's pre-existing condition. So people have a lot to lose if the law is repealed. And one thing I did just want to go back and touch on to be very clear about it, insurance companies cannot charge you more because of your pre-existing conditions. That takes effect January 1st. And also, even if you are quoted a higher price because of your age, the value of your tax credit will increase to make up that extra cost. So if you have the example of John, who is age 24 and earns $23,000 a year, and he's quoted a price of $5,000 a year for health insurance, his income is tied to his premiums, not the cost of the policy. So if John enrolled in a silver level plan, he could get health insurance for $120 a month. Now, if John is 64 and making the same income, He might be quoted a price of $15,000 a year for health insurance based on his age, but he would still pay $120 a month because the value of his tax credit would increase to offset those costs. So I just want to be very clear about that and also let folks know the Kaiser Family Foundation has an excellent subsidy calculator tool where you can go on there right now, put in your income and your family size, and see how much your family, how much financial help you would get in terms of the tax credits and the other cost-sharing reductions to get help with deductibles and co-pays. So if you Google Kaiser Family Foundation Subsidy Calculator, it'll come right up, and you can get a sense right away of how much help your family would get.
That's Aaron Neinhauser, Education and Outreach Director of Pennsylvania Access Health Network. Titus North, Executive Director of Citizen Power, Consumer Advocacy Group, wanted to make a point here.
Yeah, it's correct what Aaron's saying, that the subsidies, for people who receive subsidies, the subsidies are going to cap the premiums based on your income, and your age doesn't impact on the subsidies. If you don't qualify for subsidies, if you're past that, if you have the wrong immigration status, or if you're above the income levels that subsidies apply to, then it does matter. But yeah, there are a lot of very important protections in the Affordable Care Act, especially the pre-existing condition exclusion, the ban on those, and the ban on rescissions, that are things that people really shouldn't want to get rid of. But one thing I want to point out is that the policies themselves that people are going to buy, that's not Obamacare. It's not an Obamacare policy. It's a policy that's issued through the exchange from an insurance company, and it's regulated by the Pennsylvania Insurance Department.
It's a way for people to do comparison shopping.
Basically. So yeah, what would constitute Obamacare? You could say some of these protections that the other panelists have mentioned, or the subsidies, that's Obamacare. If Obamacare gets repealed, those certain protections go away, those certain subsidies go away, the policies themselves remain. The terms, the contracts, the terms of the policies remain. Those are binding contracts between the issuer and the purchaser. So fear of defunding or fear of a repeal of Obamacare per se should not be a reason why people would not go and purchase a policy in the exchange in the first place.
To amplify on the misinformation question.
Yeah, Dr. Hughes, go ahead.
To amplify on the misinformation question, one of the ones that was going around was about burning your Obamacare card. Well, there is no Obamacare card. When you get your insurance in the exchange, you will get a Highmark card or a UPMC card or United Healthcare card. They are private insurance plans. They are not government plans. They are not Obamacare. They are private insurance plans. So there is no Obamacare card.
Well, if there are no other points to be made and no other questions, I will take this opportunity to thank our panelists who have been... I'm sorry, there is another question. We have one more question tonight, and it comes from...
Karen,
hi.
Hi. When I say I think that this plan is a good thing, I hear all kinds of complaints. And one of the complaints I heard was, well, gee, the... Congressional Budget Office reevaluated this, and it's really going to cost a lot more than they thought. And people in the labor unions don't want this, and the Cadillac plans are, you're going to be taxed, I'm going to be taxed, everybody's going to be taxed. What are the real stories here?
Well,
Titus North. Can I start? Titus North.
We have in this country an insurance system. We have a government section of it, which is Medicare and Medicaid. We have a nonprofit section like the Blue Cross Blue Shields, and we have investor-owned insurance companies that pay dividends to their shareholders. And the most efficient section of our system is Medicare. Medicare, they're not paying 80% of their revenue for health care. They're paying over 98%. It's by far the most efficient, and it would have been good to build the new system around Medicare instead of the least functional part of the system, which is the private insurance companies. So that's a point I would like to make.
Yeah. One thing I would say, I hear a lot of that stuff too, going into different places and hearing from folks. In terms of the cost of the Affordable Care Act, according to the Congressional Budget Office, the cost of the law over the next 10 years is $1.6 trillion. But if you add up the cost of doing nothing, and the Institute of Medicine does a report each year looking at our healthcare system, where things are working, where they aren't, how we could better protect patients and better save money, and they found that in 2009, before the Affordable Care Act passed, we spent $2 trillion in 1 year on healthcare, and $700 billion of that was wasted on care that was not making people well, on prices that were too high, excessive administrative costs. So that's 30 cents on the dollar that was being wasted that we were spending on healthcare before the Affordable Care Act. There was a lot of room for improvement. So if you add up those costs over 10 years and you add on top of that the $70 billion that we spent nationally each year providing care to folks that show up in emergency rooms who couldn't afford to pay in full, you know, hospitals absorb those costs and then they pass them on to people with private insurance and to state and local taxpayers. So if you add up all of that money, it's $7.7 trillion. So that's the cost of doing nothing versus $1.6 trillion, the cost of doing something. The Congressional Budget Office has said that the Affordable Care Act reduces the deficit by $109 billion. You know, and it's paid for by using the money we're already spending on healthcare in smarter, more efficient, more effective ways, and by asking the industries that they're going to see the most financial gain from roughly 30 million new paying customers to chip in a little bit more to finance the coverage expansion. So it's a really responsible law. It's a great step forward. And just like any small business owner knows, you have to invest in a strong foundation if you want future success. And that's what the law does by bringing folks, removing the barriers to coverage, making sure no one is denied and making sure folks have affordable choices. Because if you want to have a system based on private health insurance, the only way it will work is if you have both the healthy and the sick in the pool. So that's what the law works to do and why it's been scored as a deficit reducer.
But the healthy people have to buy in, right?
The healthy people have to buy in. And there are exemptions. And I was just looking at this today and looking at different scenarios. I got a question earlier about, do you really think young people are going to sign up? And it's important to remember that young people, too, are eligible for the subsidies. And when folks are graduating college and getting into the labor market, you know, your entry-level job is maybe $22,000, $24,000 around here if you're lucky. So young people are going to get a lot of financial help and be able to get good coverage. So I do think young people will sign up.
As far as educating them, I mean, how many young people are you running into that may have the attitude that I'm young, I'm healthy, I don't need this, and maybe it's just cheaper to you know, pay the penalty at the end of the year than to enroll in some program?
Well, most people that I'm meeting, you know, young and old, are very excited about being able to have health insurance that's affordable and that is going to cover what they need. And a really important thing to remember is that, you know, for young people, important preventive services like contraception is now covered with no co-pays or cost sharing. So it's going to be a really affordable option for people. I think people are excited to get it. One thing that I don't think we've talked about is that if coverage is truly unaffordable for you, so If you're offered insurance by your employer that would cost less or that would cost more than 8% of your income for the year. So if you work at a, you know, in a low wage job and your employer offers coverage, but you can't afford it, it would cost more than 8% of your household income for the year. You're exempt from having to pay any penalty if you decide that you can't afford that coverage. The same goes here in Pennsylvania. We talked a little bit about Medicaid expansion, but that's still very much up in the air. And it doesn't look like it's going to happen on time. It does not look like it's going to happen January 1st, 2014, as the Affordable Care Act intended. So there's about 400,000 people in Pennsylvania that earn below 100% of the poverty level but can't qualify for Medicaid today. So those folks, next year, if they can't find a way to get insurance, they're not going to be penalized for that. So that's very important to stress, too. There are exemptions that if coverage is truly unaffordable, you're not going to be punished. The penalties are there to make sure that people that can afford insurance don't choose not to get it and pass their costs on to everybody else.
Thank you, Aaron Neinhauser. Titus North, yeah, very quickly.
Yes. Well, Aaron's absolutely correct that if you want to have a private insurance system, you have to have this type of apparatus built around it. But in every country that has a public insurance system, where you have, like in Europe and Japan and in Taiwan, they get much better healthcare results, they get longer life expectancy, and it's typically they spend half as much per capita on healthcare. So my point is that we really don't want a private system. We should have a public system, and we could build it around Medicare.
We have one more question from our audience, and let's go to Steve. Steve, good to have you with us, and go ahead with your question, sir.
Seems that the whole panel is pretty much in agreement that the Affordable Health Care Act is a good thing, per se, except for one. maybe.
Our single payer advocate Titus North says he.
Well, really. On balance, no, but it's got good points to it.
Aside from the politics, and it seems the Republicans have an issue with it in general, but as a Pennsylvanian in particular, what is it that the governor is? What is it that his terms are going to do to possibly stifle the progression of the act being implemented in this state?
Chris Hughes, go ahead. Yeah. Dr. Hughes, go ahead.
I think the most important provision that he's trying to adjust, I'll say, is the Medicaid expansion. You know, there are about 500,000 Pennsylvanians that are working Pennsylvanians. You know, these are people that are, you know, families with full-time jobs, almost all of them, that would benefit from Medicaid expansion. They just don't make enough money to pay for insurance or have jobs that give them insurance. Those people are being left out in the cold. So I think that's a great disservice to them, and we don't have time to get into the economics, but if you look at the economics, the Independent Fiscal Office issued a report about Medicaid expansion in Pennsylvania, and it just seems like such a no-brainer. I mean, you're bringing in so much money into the Commonwealth, and that money has a multiplier effect. It goes into the economy. It boosts the economy. It creates jobs. It just seems like such a waste to not accept that. You know, we don't know the details of what he's proposed yet, and we don't know if the federal government is going to accept it in any case.
Does the federal government have to decide? Does this have to be in terms of determining whether Governor Corbett's proposal for how Pennsylvania expands its Medicaid coverage is within the spirit of the law? How do they make that determination?
So once the Supreme Court said that the states could opt in or opt out of Medicaid, it became a bit of a negotiation. And several states have gotten strong concessions from the federal government. Arkansas and Iowa are a couple. Michigan's seeking adjustments to make it more of a private health insurance expansion rather than a strictly Medicaid expansion within the states. There's some requirements that the governor was asking for, a work requirement, for example, that is, you know, it seems to be against the law, because the way Medicaid is supposed to work is that if you meet these requirements, you're supposed to get the benefit. So that's a negotiation. The federal government could say, you know what, no, we don't find that acceptable, and therefore we're going to reject your request, or they could negotiate and come to an agreement. So we really don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how hard-headed each side is going to be and if they're going to come up with an agreement.
Titus North.
Yeah, and I would prefer to see the governor expand Medicaid along the lines that other states are. He's not. As Chris mentioned,
in terms of the way Ohio is doing it,
I mean the terms of the states who just went along with it in the first place. I would just prefer it to be expanded. I just want to clarify, and this is not exactly in defense of the governor's decision, but I want to clarify that for people who are listening who might be in that category between 100 and 133% of federal poverty level, so basically minimum wage workers, that you would be able to get insurance through the exchange. You would get subsidies, and the insurance that you get would be good insurance. In some ways, it might be better than Medicaid. In some ways, maybe not. But it would come in. It's not a decision I favor. But I just want people to know that there is a plan B for them. They'll be able to for most of them, they'll be able to go in and get insurance in the marketplace.
Aaron Neinhauser.
There is a plan B for some folks, but just to be very clear, because the Affordable Care Act thought that every single state would expand Medicaid, it set those tax credits to start at 100% of the poverty level. So anyone that's below that, so if you're a single person and you earn less than $11,500 for the year, you won't be able to get financial help to get a policy in the marketplace. You will be able to buy a catastrophic policy, which will be more affordable than any of the other ones offered. It would cover 3 primary care visits, also have to cover preventive care with no copays or cost sharing, so that's going to be an option for folks. But there's about 400,000 people that are in that gap below 100%, and that's why we've been working so hard to make sure that Medicaid expansion happens and happens right away. One of our concerns with the governor's proposal is that he would also want to change the current Medicaid program. And most of who Medicaid covers in Pennsylvania today are seniors, children, and people with disabilities. If you are just an adult that doesn't have young dependent children, or you're just going through a rough time financially, you can't qualify for Medicaid. You have to need a life-sustaining medication. You have to be very, very sick. So it's hard. It's very hard to qualify for Medicaid today. The folks that are on it really need it and are in tough situations. So putting in place things like a work search requirement, putting in place copay or premiums for folks, those are the kind of things that Health and Human Services would have to approve. And it's not clear that they would, but it's at least a year away, which is very worrying for us.
I would add one final thought.
Yes, Dr. Hughes.
When Governor Kasich in Ohio was making his plea for Medicaid expansion in his state, he said he talked to a legislator and said, "I know you're a religious man." He said, "When you get to the pearly gates and St. Peter is waiting to meet you there, he's not going to ask you what you did to limit the size of government. He's going to ask you what you did to help the poor, and you better have a good answer."
And that might be a good note to end on. I want to thank our guests, our panelists, Titus North, Executive Director of Citizen Power, a consumer advocacy group, Dr. Christopher Hughes, the Pennsylvania Director for Doctors for America, Rachel Dingfelder, Development Coordinator for the Midwife Center for Birth and Women's Health, and Erin Neinhauser, Education and Outreach Director of Pennsylvania Access Health Network. Let's have a round of applause. Russ Lloyd has been our engineer. Katie Blackley and Matthew Spangler provided production assistance. Tammy Turwelp is 90.5 WESA's program director. Kevin Gavin provided script supervision. Heather McLean is the assistant producer. Marcus Charleston is the producer. And I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thank you for joining us for this public forum hosted by Essential Pittsburgh.